Many years ago, there was a brilliant and disturbing and frankly a rather largely unnoticed movie from Argentina called Man Facing Southeast. The opening of the movie is terrifying. In an office in a mental hospital, a psychiatrist is sitting across from a man whose entire head, eyes, all of it is wrapped in bandage. The bandaged man, we learn, and we learn this from the psychiatrist's thoughts, was part of a suicide pact with his lover. His lover has succeeded in killing herself, but this man has failed and now sits blinded, crushed by the thought that he must live the rest of his life with the consequences of the pact and his miserable failure. A tear drops from beneath the bandage, and the psychiatrist thinks to himself, this man is devastated. He needs to be touched, to be held. Yet my professional training tells me it's unprofessional, maybe even detrimental to his healing if I touch the man. So the man, untouched, is led away. Shortly after this, a young man enters the same office, and he asks to be committed to this institution. Why, asks the psychiatrist. Well, because I come from another planet. But if I tell anyone, they'll think I'm a lunatic and have me locked up in this asylum. So I'm saving them the trouble. What safer place is there for me than here? Again, the doctor tries to be professional, clinical, objective, and he says, and what brings you to planet Earth? And the visitor replies, although our technology is superior to yours, we have a dimension that you lack. And what might that be, asks the doctor. Well, you see, the visitor says, we have only the capacity to reason, but you have both the capacity to reason and to feel. I was sent here to find out how you human beings, with both these capabilities, to reason and to feel, have managed to act so stupidly that the entire universe has become endangered because of you. You can stay, says the doctor. Now, throughout the film, it's unclear if the visitor is really an extraterrestrial or not. What does become clear is how stupidly we act. The man who supposedly lacks emotions, who can only reason, is soon seen by the other patients and eventually the townspeople as something of a messiah. A legend grows around him. He's a miracle worker. When he sees someone is cold, he makes the cold vanish. When a large man gets up from every meal hungry, the man cures him of his hunger. How does he perform these miracles? For the woman who is cold, the stranger puts a blanket around her without even asking how she got to be without clothes. For the hungry man, the visitor asks a small man who is full to share his leftovers with the larger, hungry man. Miracles? Common sense? Very simple reasoning. Unfettered by the knowledge that our society makes a virtue of withholding resources, the visitor makes available to people what they lack. For those who are hungry, he finds food. For those who are cold, he finds clothing. For those lacking self-esteem, he finds a compliment. For those who lack companionship, he finds a friend. For those without love, he has tenderness and a touch. For those without self-confidence, he provides respect and dignity. There's a teaching of Maimonides that I once heard summarized like this. When the world finally figures out that knowledge is the most exciting thing, what a beautiful place the world will be. Because when that happens, we won't have a scarcity problem. There's plenty enough knowledge to go around. Scarcity, real or imagined, causes so many of our problems. We come from a tradition that wants us to have faith that scarcity is not a problem. The best things in life are free. There really is enough love to go around. There really is enough learning and wisdom and knowledge for everyone to luxuriate in all they want. There is enough food to go around if we could just get our act together. There's enough caring. There's enough creativity. If we could just shavat vayinafash, if we could just stop, take a deep breath, we might discover, yesh lanu hakol. We have it all. At its best, a connection to God gives us this sense of fullness and well-being. I believe that at its core, religion is about learning this lesson and making the changes in our lives and in our society that are necessary to live it in deeper and more beautiful ways. The problem is we are so hurting. We have wounds from our past. We look at the present through the lens of these wounds. We get a distorted view. Someone grows up with parents who were harsh and unloving and views the world as harsh and unloving, even when it's not. To such a person, the world looks like a place with a scarcity of love, even though the reality is it's a world of great abundance. I believe tradition has a lot to state to us about how to transform ourselves and our world to a place where we feel the abundance of the blessings around us, a great and profound sense of gratitude, and all of this can challenge this whole notion of scarcity. Our tradition gives us teshuvah, the idea that we can return to the place of this faith and feeling of abundance, and to the security and confidence that results from this kind of teshuvah. Our tradition teaches us holiness that we can experience. Live one beautiful Shabbat, and then tell me the world has a scarcity problem. Shabbat, when lived deeply, gives us a sense that we have enough of everything that is important, especially enough love and hope. I believe our sense of scarcity scares us off the holiness path, and that faith and confidence puts us squarely on that path. Much in life knocks us off the journey towards holiness. There are many tricks we play on ourselves, many ways we hide, especially as we get older and changes become scarier. But we've got a Torah that tells us that we can be like our grandparents, Abraham crossing a river into a new life, Jacob wrestling the long night of the soul and then becoming Israel, Leah who transforms her bitterness into the deepest gratitude, Moses going from Prince of Egypt to slave liberator to God's chevruta partner. These stories are inside of us. They are our great inheritance. We can learn not only from them, but we can live them. We can transform our lives and have faith in the abundance of love and kindness in our lives and commit to sharing them with others. To live this way, we need to unlearn what is taught us in our cradles and get to an understanding that scarcity, sometimes a reality in the physical world, never has to be a reality in the world of feelings. Love and human kindness are qualities without measure, and their rewards are without measure. Maybe not always in the marketplace, but in the human heart and in the heart and eyes of God. Assurance, validation, dignity, respect, these are human needs. They may be rare like diamonds, but that's only because we've distorted God's world to make them scarce. We've managed to render dear, meaning scarce, what our dear God has urged us to pour out on those whom we hold dear and those who are dear to others. Expressions of validation, gestures of approval, words of love, tender touches, loving glances, a sincere, heartfelt thank you. There need be no shortage of these things. Each day the observant Jew prays to God, please do not hide yourself from us. In other words, we plead with God, please do not make yourself scarce. It's a simple expression of fear that God might do to us what we've done to each other, deny longings for care and love. Why is it so difficult for us to give more freely of that which will in truth never run out? Isn't it because we've adopted the law of supply and demand, that cold, hard rule of the marketplace, to be the operative law in human relationships, so that even these things are also considered dearer when scarce? I'd like to tell you how my sister, Betty — I've told you stories about Betty before — how she learned this lesson when she was in middle school. For many years, our mother, may she rest in peace, was agoraphobic. One summer, Betty spent the entire vacation at our mother's bedside watching TV with her. She became depressed. After a few months into the next school year, a teacher noticed that she seemed sad. She asked Betty to stay after class. My sister was terrified. The teacher said to her, "I could tell you're feeling down, Betty. Can you tell me what's troubling you?" Averting her eyes, afraid to make contact, Betty told her about her summer and that she was left feeling sad and bad about herself. The teacher softly said to her, "Look at the walls, Betty. Look at the walls of this classroom." Betty wasn't sure what she was getting at. "Look at the walls," she said. Betty lifted her eyes, started looking at the walls of her classroom. "Betty, the walls of this classroom are covered with your work. Every poem you write, every picture you draw is on the walls of this room." Those words changed my sister's life. Words of comfort, kindness, affirmation. My sister is now a school teacher and an accomplished artist, and she remembers that teacher. And she once said, "Every day I try to give that away to one of my students. Simple human kindness and sensitivity that saved a girl's life and is now freely given to her students. Doesn't cost her anything, but may save another student's life." The Bible says tzedakah is as strong as death. I like the way it's expressed in a modern song which says, "Love is stronger than death. Love outlasts death." There need be no shortage of the most important things in life: love, human kindness, caring. There is simply no good reason to withhold them from our families, from our friends, our community, and our world. When we are able to express our love and pour gratitude and acts of kindness and affirmation on those around us, our lives take on a dignity that not even death can shatter. Tomorrow during Yizkor, when we remember those who cared for us and who told us they love us, let us remember the great gift we can give to those we love and to our world: the covenant of love and kindness. May our children and grandchildren be blessed with this gift from us. On this sacred Yom Kippur day, I implore you, let those whom you love know that you love them, and distribute care and kindness as though they were as plentiful as the sand at the sea and the stars in the sky. Ken Yehi Ratzon. May this be God's will.